Hey guys, and welcome to Smart Women Read Romance, a book review podcast where we fangirl over all things romance. I'm Jessen.
And I'm Juliette.
And today we'll be reviewing Captive of the Horde King, the first book in Zoe Draven's Horde Kings of Drakkar series. But before we dive in, make sure that you subscribe to the podcast on your preferred podcast platform and please rate and review us. If you want more romance discussions, follow us on our social media pages at SWReadRom. Join our Facebook group, The Swoon Zone, and follow my YouTube channel, Jessen Reads Romance. If you'd like some podcast extras, become a patron of the podcast on Patreon, where we have extra content, including exclusive episodes, and give away free enamel pins, stickers, books, and bookmarks. Special shout out to our patrons. We love and appreciate you. So,
yes.
So, did you watch, the little preview for Bridgerton season two?
Oh my God. Multiple times. She embodies Kate so well. Are you excited?
I was like clapping, and I was like, yes, girl, yes, do it. She, listen.
Handed him his ass.
She did. Okay, so. If you have not listened to our past episodes, we talk about Bridgerton season one multiple times and stuff. We also have an episode on The Viscount Who Loved Me, which is what season two is based on.
Anthony and Kate.
Because we love Anthony and Kate. Because their relationship is fucking phenomenal. And Kate is fucking phenomenal. I just love, like, that's probably one of my favorite enemies to lovers romances.
Yes, I was going to say that.
It's so good. The banter's so good. And it's just delicious. So when they had that little preview showing the characters just going at it, and it was beautiful because Kate, the actress, is perfect.
Yes.
She set him down. I was like, damn, this that is burned. Exactly. Yes. That burned. And Anthony's just like, what?
What happened?
Who is this creature who just like does not succumb to my charms? What? I don't understand.
I know. He's so confused, poor baby.
It was absolutely phenomenal.
Oh my goodness.
So like now I feel, at first like I was a little bit nervous. I'm like, how are they going to adaptations?
Are they going to, follow the plot? Because you and I are both nervous about this one because this is like one of our,
our favorite.
Yeah. So we're like, please be pure to the plot, please. You know, and it looks like, I mean, I'm sure there will be differences, but the characters are going to be the same.
They embody the essence of Anthony and Kate in that scene. That scene put me like at ease. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm here for it. Like, hurry the fuck up.
Also, her dress was absolutely beautiful. Oh, I think that the costumes are going to look really, really beautiful this season. And also, Anthony had a little hair update, and his sideburns aren't like as prominent. Long. Like, they're not as bushy and stuff.
Bushy,
he kind of looks a little bit younger in this season, which I like, because he kind of looked a little bit older in season one.
Yeah.
But like he looks a lot younger. I mean, like Jonathan Bailey, the actor, is super fine. Like he's really beautiful.
His shirtless scenes are nice.
Yes.
I appreciate
We love those. Yeah. So I'm wondering, since in season one, like the first scene that he had to like shoot was the ass bared scene, I wonder if he was like, damn it.
I remember I saw an interview and he said it's that was his first scene.
Their butt?
It was his first scene he ever had to film. And he's like, are you serious?
Hey, you're talking about breaking the ice.
I know.
Drop your pants.
Okay, drop your pants.
We're going to put a little makeup on your butt.
We know it's broad daylight and there's, you know, whatever. The whole crew
That
here.
Must be so awkward.
I know. Well, wouldn't be me, but
Anyway, we are absolutely so excited about the season. And I was just happy to see that little preview. And I can't wait to see a full trailer, like full trailer to give like the plot. And like there's a bunch of questions that I have after season one, like with the Featheringtons, like who's going to be like the next, like the heir to that. And I'm just curious how that's going to play out, because that's totally different from the book.
Yeah, that is.
Like completely. So.
But I really like that she's bumped up the plot of the Featheringtons.
Like, she's made them more prominent. They're not just like the peripheral figures that everyone always like laughs at because they're so dumb.
The comical relief.
They actually have like a story to tell.
And we also found out about Penelope very early on.
Which is very interesting.
Yeah, because in the books, you don't find out until her book.
I think that some people were disappointed in that, and I think we talked about it, but I
disappointed
think
that they found out too early?
Yeah, disappointed that it was revealed that she was a Lady Whistledown, but I think that it would make it exciting, because if the audience knows this Penelope, they don't want her to get caught.
Right.
And if she has a lot of close calls, that'll make it fun and exciting.
agree.
And also, it would be funny if, like, Penelope thinks that, oh, maybe someone's on to me, and, like, the characters are just, like, oblivious, and it's like, oh, okay, I'm safe right now.
I think I agree.
I think it'd be fun.
I think it's going to build suspense, specifically because, just like you said, we know Penelope's the one who's hiding, so if
and
someone
she's
is, like,
lying
getting close,
to people, and,
or if somebody's reading it and she's in the room, like, we know she wrote it, you
I
know?
I think it'll make fun scenes for TV,
so
and I think that that was a fun thing.
I agree.
Anyway.
Good choice, right, Shonda. We like that. We approve.
We approve. Anyway, let's get to the book that we were discussing.
Yes! Let's talk about
Juliet
the
Juliet is absolutely obsessed with the series now.
Obsessed.
She is currently binging the series after she finished book one. She went on straight to book two, downloaded book three right now.
Yes.
So she's almost done with the books that are currently out right now. There's only four.
Oh, I need to save her. I need to slow down.
And we recently did an episode on the Golden Dynasty, and honestly, I didn't even think about it, putting it on the Captive of the Horde King on the podcast so soon after Golden Dynasty, but like I must be in some type of mood because I was like, oh, I love this.
I know, and I had never even heard of this. I was like, whatever. Okay, Jess. I mean, I'd actually heard of the author, but I just had not tried any of her books, and so I was like, all right, whatever. I'll try this, and then I was like hooked. Like, just like, oh.
Well, that's what happened
in.
To me when I read it the first time on vacation. I was supposed to read a bunch of other books, but after I read the first one, I was like, oh, wait, no, I have to finish the series.
That's what I'm doing.
So it's very bingeable, and I really like it. And if you're familiar with Game of Thrones, if you've read The Golden Dynasty, then it has those similar elements where we have this primitive kind of like planet with nomadic warriors who roam. I just really enjoyed the world because it's like, it's an alien planet, you know? Mm-hmm. It's not just like a different kind of like world. It's just like alien planet, humans are refugees on this planet. Mm-hmm. And I just really enjoyed the setup. I thought that it was really fun, and I cannot wait to talk about these characters because I think that Zoe Draven does some interesting things, especially with the hero, and I really like it.
Oh my God, Dothakar made me, did it make you think of the city in Westeros. What's the main city where the
Iron
Throne? King's Landing. Yes. Did it make you kind of picture that?
Yeah. I mean, it definitely has like a similar vibe.
Yeah.
To.
I mean, they don't describe that until book two. Sorry.
But it's not in book one.
I'm sorry. I'm not going to talk about book two this whole time.
Juliet's so excited.
I just finished it last night. It was so good.
All right, so let's discuss the characters really briefly before we move on to the spoiler section. So our heroine is named Luna, and she's a human refugee. She actually was born on this planet because the humans have been on the planet for 30 years. But the problem is that there is this federation that made the deal with the king of Drakkar, and the Uranian Federation are allowed to could place humans on the planet, but they were in charge of basically giving resources to the humans, so they have to give them like rations and supplies. And Luna has grown up on this planet, and she's only known like suffering and near starvation because the Uranian Federation doesn't always bring them rations. And so and they're not allowed to hunt game on Drakkar. They're not allowed to like plant stuff. Like they're very limited in using the planet as a resource because that was the original deal. And unfortunately, her brother decides that their village is like starving. They're starving. Her brother is very into gardening and stuff, wants to try a new method that he's kind of heard rumored would help the soil be
which
more
is
fertile.
Right, by the way.
He burns all the crops. But the problem is
he burns this field.
It burns more than he expected it to. And it's pretty obvious like to anybody around where this fire
it
is.
It's a giant fire.
Exactly.
Like blazing into the sky.
So Luna's just like, what have you done? The Horde Kings are going to come. And like, it's okay. I'll protect you. So Luna and her brother Kivan are orphans, and she's in charge of her brother. She's only 5 years older, but she's used to like taking him under her wing, and she has to be the one to protect him from this. And when the Horde King comes, so the Dakari come on their beasts, which Luna, she's deathly afraid of them, and we'll talk about it why. And so whenever they come, she sees the Horde King, and she basically offers herself up in place of her brother. Like, don't punish punish him, punish me. Take me. If you want me, you can take me. So the Horde King, like, takes a look at her.
Oh, God, I love this scene.
And we don't find out his name right away because the Dakari actually have this thing about names. They don't actually just give out their names. It's, like, special.
Because they have, if someone has your name, they have power over you. They have power over you.
So we just know that he is the Vorakhan. That's what they call, like, the Horde Kings of, like, each individual horde. And he's looking at her, and he asks her to take her hood off and sees her. And we know that he likes what he's seeing. And he makes it very clear, like, oh, so you're going to offer yourself in place of
your
brother.
He, like, cuts her cloak off so he can look her up and down.
And it is extremely clear
that
he's going to expect her to be in his bed. And she agrees. Yeah. Like, she knows full well, and she agrees.
Yeah, and I kind of like where she even – they remember once that a Horde King – that not a Horde King, that a Dakari had taken this other girl, Matilda, or something from another village, and, you know.
So she's expecting the worst.
Yeah, she's expecting the absolute worst.
Yes. But she's still doing it because she'd rather be the one –
to protect her brother.
Yes, she wants her brother to survive. So that's our setup for the story. Yes. And it's very
exciting. Have a gajillion things to say, so we have to hurry into the spoiler section.
Yes. Okay, so if you've not read Captive of the Horde King, you should totally go pick it up and then come back and chat with us. All right, spoiler section.
Woo! All right. Okay.
So let's talk about the Dakari, like how, what kind of, what do they look like?
Yes.
Like,
let's talk about what they look like. And then I want to talk a little bit about their god goddess too.
Oh, yeah.
That's
very
important.
The dual. Yes.
So I imagine them as just these like giant, muscly men. They're human. They look like human.
They're humanoid. Absolutely. But they have a tail.
Except they have tails. And they have strange eyes that go from yellow to black. I also noticed that there are a couple that have red eyes, red rimmed eyes.
Yeah.
And she hasn't told us why some have red, but most have yellow.
Yeah.
Which I don't understand yet. So I'm kind of expecting.
I can't remember because it's been like a couple months since I've read the whole
series. Do you know why?
I can't remember.
I'm sorry. I thought you meant like. You're like, I can't remember what book it was in.
No, you're asking me if there's an explanation, but I don't know.
I need to know, Jess.
I don't know.
But yeah, but most of them have yellow eyes. And she describes them as a little strange. And and their noses must be flatter because they talk about them being like flaring like slits.
Mm-hmm.
So
and they also have golden tattoos as well.
Yes. Oh, golden tats, big and muscly tails that he likes to use to wrap around her thigh, which I like a lot.
Yeah, they actually use the tails. They like use it as another like hand, basically. And
and I thought of like the pierogi, the beasts that they ride. To me, I picture them because they're black scale. I picture them as like velociraptors, like big.
Oh my god! I was picturing more of like a definitely like of the dinosaur variety, but I was like more like a big burly like one. They're scaly and
they're
a little
scaly.
Bit terrifying, especially to Luna.
Especially to Luna.
Because she mentions that her mother was killed by a pierogi. And it's
and
like
we know that she's on her own with her brother when the Horde King comes with seven of his men. And the reason that they have this law that you cannot burn the land is that it offends their goddess. Their goddess Kakari is the land. She is the earth. And I love that the god who loves her is like the winds, the storms, the weather. I just love this.
Nourishes her, protects her.
That nourishes her, brings her light, brings her rain, you know, and protects her. It's the coolest like concept. I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, I do. I do really like that setup.
Yes.
And how they're really conscious of the land, about not over hunting. See, the Dakar, they hunt.
Yeah.
They plant, but they know about the resources. They know how much they can hunt. They know, you know. And that's the problem with this whole deal is, though the humans are able to be on this planet, they really don't know anything about it.
Right.
You know?
And obviously, like, they can plant, but within a certain area, they cannot go beyond a certain area of their, whatever their little, posts
and they don't
are,
know like
are.
The seasons. They don't know what plants actually,
what actually
do
grows,
well.
What seeds will actually grow here? Like they don't know.
It's, they know nothing.
Yeah.
So survival is tough for humans. Yes. And like, they just look at the Dakari as these, you know, barbarians who yes. will sooner kill you than right. help you. They don't yeah. want to understand your troubles. Yes. And the Dakari just look at humans as people who are going to wreck their beloved planet. So it's like, there's no communication really between the right. two races. Even, right. Oh, also something that I really love in this book, which is dissimilar to the Golden Dynasty and also Ice Planet Barbarians, which they mm-hmm. all have like similar vibes, right. is there's a universal tongue that yes. they can communicate with. So yes. there's no language barriers between our characters. And I love right. that.
Because all the Horde Kings have to learn the universal language. And that comes from the big city Dothakar, whatever. But there are a lot of people who don't have the language. And so, like, if you're, what do they call that? It's called the Dothic. The city is called Dothic.
Yeah, Dothic.
Yeah. If you're from Dothic, then you know the universal language. So there's some characters who do, some who don't. And all the Horde Kings do, which is awesome. Yes.
I love them. Okay. So she has to ride on the pierogi with her new captive, who she's like, okay, well, he's going to use my body. Right. And I'm just going to have to suck it up. And I also really like how she gets there, and of course she wants to stand up for herself, but she's also just like, I agreed to this. Like, she yeah. keeps repeating, like, I knowingly agreed to this, so, like, I can't be mad about the situation.
You will serve me. He says, will you serve me?
Will you serve me?
And like, she, you know, said yes. Yeah. And so she knows that means in all things, you know, basically like his little geisha is going to, you know. And so, yeah, I love that she's in a bad situation, but at the same time, she's like, I'm doing this to protect my brother, to protect my village.
Yeah, she knows she's doing it for a reason. She's not saying, like, you're forcing me to do anything, because she's like, oh, you asked me and I agreed. You know what I'm saying?
Right. She's like, feels like it's self-sacrifice.
Exactly. And she has to endure this type of thing. When she gets to the Horde camp, there's yeah. a bunch of tents. And she is absolutely stunned to see when they put the pierogi in their pens that they're feeding the pierogi fresh meat. She's like never seen fresh meat
yeah.
before.
Yeah.
Like this is, and she's like, the animals are eating better than we are.
Yeah.
She is stunned. Okay. And
frustrated.
Absolutely, you know? Frustrated, because she's just like, if we could only feed ourselves, you know, if we only knew about, if we could only hunt game, then we wouldn't be starving
it
and
makes
desperate.
Me wonder, like you said about the Uranian Federation, did they abandon them purposely because they've just stopped sending rations, or have something happened to the Federation? You know what I mean?
Like, I don't know, because they're a very gray figure that we never right, see or talk
right.
about.
They're supposed
you know?
To be sending supplies, but all of a sudden they've been stopped sending supplies. So now you've got humans breaking laws in order to survive.
Yes,
you know?
Exactly.
Which that continues in a different way into the second book, I can tell you. And I just love it that it's still different, but also we're seeing the same problem.
Exactly.
You know?
And then whenever she gets into the tent, which is his tent, the Vorra Khan's tent, huge, luxurious. And she's just like,
oh my gosh.
Wow, this is not like barbarian land.
No,
like, this is like amazing.
There's
I've never seen
yes.
these, you know, beautiful cloths, and there's like fires burning. There's a pleasant scent from the oils that are like warming, and she just like, wow.
It's so beautiful.
And they like, bring in a bath, and she just like, I bathed 4 days ago. I'm fine.
I know. They're like, no.
They bathe often. The Dakari yes. bathe often, and she's like, water's a commodity. This feels wasteful. So we can
right.
see there's such a clash. She's come from nothing.
Not a culture clash.
A culture clash. Mm-hmm. She's come from nothing. She's like, these are, you know, these are resources that are scarce in my village. And she feels so guilty that
yes,
she gets to enjoy this
yes.
luxury. And that's honestly where most of her conflict comes from. It's not necessarily that she doesn't want to, you know, perform her role. She's very guilty about enjoying her time
like,
here.
Yeah, it reminds me of like almost like survivor guilt. Like, you know, she's like, okay, I'm supposed to be sacrificing myself, and my life is way better than my brother who's stuck back there. And she also knows that her brother is sort of an outcast. He's always been mistreated in their village. And so she's been deathly afraid of like what has happened to him since she's gone, because she knows that the leader of their little village or whatever is probably going to kick him out, and then he'll be all by himself. So she's having these fears like constantly. And so I love it when he goes to feed her meat for the first time. She's like, no, she refuses. She only takes like broth. And he's like really frustrated with this, but he kind of lets it go at first.
Right, exactly. And also of note, when he comes in, like she is expecting him to just like ravish her right on
right.
the spot. And From riding the pierogi, like we said, they're scaled and she's not used to riding anything at all. Her thighs are really chafed. And whenever he sees it, he says that he's not going to do anything because she needs to rest and recover. Mm-hmm. And so we already know that this hero is conscious of like her comfort and doesn't want to hurt her. Like this is the biggest indication already.
Yes. He also assigns two women. They're called her peekies. Her peeky, which is basically like women to serve her.
Her little handmaidens. Her handmaidens.
Yes.
Like Mirari and Lavi. And Mirari's the one. Nice. Yeah, Mirari actually can speak the universal tongue. Lavi can't, but like they communicate very well. And they're very.
There's a cutest relationship between these three women.
They actually become good friends, you know? And I really like it too. Like they're
even Lavi is hilarious.
There was a scene later on that we have to talk about. It's funny.
It's so perfect. Good.
She has the best advice. It's great.
Yes, she's awesome.
And like Juliet says, he tries to force her to eat because she is malnourished. And he's like, you can't suffer. He doesn't want her to suffer.
No.
And she's like, my village goes hungry, so I'm not going to eat. And like, he even tries to pleasure her to distract her so that he can like pop something in her mouth so she can eat. And she's like throwing down. Okay. Yes. So she's like so resistant. She's like, if my brother's starving, I can't just fill my belly and be okay with that, you know? Mm-hmm. And so he's just like, fine, you're wasting energy. And if you're going to waste energy, then you're better enough and we're going to fuck tonight, basically. And she's like, out of the frying pan, into the fire.
And I love, almost from the very beginning, he calls her, starts calling her Kazakari, which she doesn't know what that means, which we find out later means my mate. He's so calling her mate from the very beginning. Like she
point blank says, I think she was asking like, okay, so I'm just your whore. So like, why are you even pretending like I'm anything more? Like just get it over with. Like she wants it to be over with. Cause she's just like, this is like, you know, delaying the inevitable. And he was just like, you think you're going to be my whore? Like, no, you're going to be my Kasakari, my Morikari or Morikar.
Yeah, Morikari is queen and Kasakari is my mate.
And he says it, but she's still confused. She's just like, that doesn't compute. Like,
I'm a human. I'm a filthy human you brought from the village. What
I love
are you talking
as the
about?
Reader. I love as the reader. We know that he immediately is like, you're more to me.
Yes.
And she is not understanding because, like we said, she doesn't really know anything about the Dakari. She thinks they're complete barbarians. And so she's not expecting this kindness and also that he's going to treat her mm-hmm. as his wife, basically.
But it's obvious that not everybody's welcoming to her in the camp. Most are. Most are just curious about
her. A lot
her.
Haven't even seen humans really up close, you know?
Right.
And like we said, there's this misconception between both races that, you know, Dakari are very barbarian-like mm-hmm. and just take what they want. And humans are people who just destroy their planet. And so they both just don't think the best. But I really do like that we're getting like a really good glimpse into the type of man our hero is, because even though he did say to her like, oh, since you have the energy to fight me because you don't want to eat, then we're going to fuck that night. He tries to pleasure her and she is feeling pleasure, but like I said, feeling guilty. So she's like crying because she's like has all these rolling emotions. And as soon as he sees she's crying, he just stops. He stops and he's just like, okay, go to sleep. And she's like, what?
Sleep Kalis. Kalis is female.
I freaking love that. And I'm just like, oh, and she's so confused. So I love how this just throws her for a loop again and again and again. She expects the worst and she doesn't get it.
He is nothing but like, this is my queen and I will treat her as she deserves, you know, like it's awesome.
Exactly. And so the next day, whenever he's gone and she sees like a lot of the pierogi are gone, her little peekies say that, oh, they've gone, you know, hunting to make sure that there's no Gertons around.
Oh, yes.
And this is where we learn about, she was completely unaware that there was another race on this planet called the Gertons, and they are like a scourge on
this
planet.
Vicious,
they're the worst of the worst.
Marauding, pillaging, raping race.
And the reason why there are hordes and horde kings roaming around is because they're controlling the Gertons and making sure that the Gertons don't,
they
have to stay in the Deadlands. They're another race that are not native to Dakar, but they came as refugees, but they're just
they're not
bad
welcome.
News. They're not welcome
they're
at
not
all.
Welcome. Like, if they could kill them all, they would kill them all.
Exactly.
They just see them as, like Justin said, a scourge on this planet.
And Luna's like, so y'all have been protecting us against the curtains?
Yes.
Like, we've never even heard about them. And so this is news to her.
Because they've been fighting and warriors have been dying protecting, you know, the other humans on the planet. Because they know that humans are relatively helpless compared to themselves as far as like being warriors. They don't know about sort of the starvation part of it. But I love that. I love that added part of the plot that, oh my God, there's another like terrible race that they're protecting the the humans from.
So this is, again, like we're seeing the friendship develop with Mirari and Lavi and Luna. And when she basically confides in her Peaky, like, I just don't feel comfortable. This is all like so much for me. My village doesn't have anything. I want to change that, but he just doesn't care about my village. And Mirari's like, look, listen, you know, the whole point of Amorakari is that the Vorakar needs softness, and he can only be soft with a certain amount of people, and that's what his queen's supposed to be. Like, you're supposed to comfort him and stuff. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you can do that for him, if you can be, like, basically a shoulder to lean on, then maybe you can get him to do stuff that you want.
To influence, yes. You know?
Yes. And so she's like, huh, maybe I will have to try that when he comes back.
Yeah.
And
we learned that when he does return, he's basically said that, what's the wedding feast called? The Tasamara?
Yeah, Tasamari or something like that.
Yeah, it's like 3 days, the Tasamara.
There's got to be a black moon, and it's like the old way to claim your bride.
It's
like a ceremony.
That.
It's like, I will claim you in the old way, you know, and you will be my queen. And also, so this is another part we learn about the names, and because you're just like, I don't even know his name.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, well, names are special. Like, we can't just call you Luna, you know?
And he got mad when she said her name, like
to
know.
Them. Yeah. Like, you can't just give out your name. But again, she doesn't even know, so she has to be taught. But the thing about it is, he actually gives her his name.
Yes.
Like, before they're even, like, on the same page
it
at all.
Like it's just day
it's,
or
it's
something.
This, it's this trust that he's giving to her. And he's like, my name is Arkhan, and only one other person knows my name.
Yeah.
So it's just like, whoa, okay.
I love
so
he's that he's serious. Just like, y'all, he is all in the second he sees her and hears her voice.
He is. And like, that's what I like to see. That's what
I love
like
it.
To see.
So good.
So this is, she has to go get the golden tattoos before the Black Moon ceremony. And this is where we meet Hukan, who is this old surly woman. And when they go get the tattoos, he actually gets tattoos around his wrist too, his golden tattoos. And she gets her golden tattoos. And
it's like king, it's like, she gets
king
like the
and queen
ones.
Little circlets.
But in her circlets are reflective of his name, his name cuff or whatever, which I thought was cool.
And this woman is much rougher with her.
Hukan is a biatch.
And we find out later whenever her Peaky are like washing her and preparing her for the ceremony that Hukan is actually Arkhan's aunt. So,
yeah.
And his family are all dead except for Hukan. They
are
the
Hukan
last.
Hukan had saved him when they were attacked by Gurtin. We also learned that it was from it was a Gurtin that his father had let go, had shown mercy on, and he had brought back his own like pack of Gurtin, who basically killed his mother, raped and killed his mother, killed his father, and then he was snuck out by Hukan. He was saved. So they were the only ones left of his
They're the last
name.
Of the Roth Kitali.
Kitali, yeah.
And it's just like a family, you know, name. And so they're last of their kind. And so it kind of sucks because she's like, okay, well, I have to be nice to this woman, this Hukan woman who hates me. And she literally tells her, because Hukan's like, hey, I want to talk to her alone. Like, you go outside the tent, Arkhan. Mm-hmm. And she's like, you're not good enough for him. Like, he needs somebody strong, and you're weak, and you're soft.
Ugh.
And she even like grabs her like freshly wounded skin and like squeezes it. And I'm like, fucking bitch.
She is such a bitch.
But
I hate her.
I love how Luna stands up for herself, and she's like, you don't even know me. You don't know what I've suffered.
You don't know what he
like,
means.
I've seen things. I've done things, you
oh,
know.
This is also when we learned, she said, I had to, you know, my mother was attacked by a Prokean. I had to put her down at 14. So you don't tell me about suffering. Like,
exactly.
It was so good. I loved it.
I did. I like her showing her claws and stuff.
Yes.
And so she has to, that night at the ceremony, she has to wear some revealing clothes, which is basically a mini skirt and a big golden chain. pain with her nipples painted gold.
Yes, her, I love it when her her Peaky, her friends are coming, just like trying to paint her nipples. She's like, what are you doing?
Like don't goes, touch me.
Don't touch my nipples. Give me the gold paint. I'll do it. You
and
know?
She's like, he has to like take the gold into his mouth. So like, it's a thing to happen.
Like the gold is like representative of like everything on the planet and all this stuff, of their goddess and all this stuff. So yeah, so gold is like a big representation. I do love when she's ready. She's in this short ass skirt that's basically showing her butt cheeks almost, and the necklace just barely covers her breast. Like it's the old way, and she's like, fine, this fucking old way, you know. But when he lifts her on the horse, this is my favorite part. He cups her pussy, and he's like, no one will see this but me, you know, like he hides it because he knows people can see as they're riding. And she's like, what the shit is this? But I just thought that was okay. This is the moment
it's
where I was
possessive,
like,
hero yes, display
yes yes yes
that
yes.
Juliet absolutely yes. swoons for, which it yes. is swoony. And then so they have to like stand sit on the little like thrones, and everyone's basically partying, and this they bring the meat to her, and she's trying to refuse again because she's only, you know, said that she was going to take some broth. But he's like, okay, so I have sent, you know, some people to your
bargain.
Village.
Yes.
And they will get meat enough to last them 3 months if they dry it properly. And she's like, okay, well,
they don't even know how.
Yeah. Oh. They don't know. Can they teach them? And he's like, fine, my people will teach your people how to dry this meat. And so can you please eat the meat now? And she's like, okay, I will. And like, it's so delicious for her, like it's
she can't
fine.
Even believe it,
and
yeah.
it's like the first time that she's ever been like full and like sated. And so now we see that he's willing to help her people, which the Dakari don't do to humans, in order to make her comfortable, in order to make her, you know, accepting of this life. Because he keeps telling her, you're no longer human, you're Dakari now, like this is just the way it is.
Yeah,
you're gonna be Dakari, you have to shed your old like thoughts and, you know, be committed to our people. And she's struggling with that because she's like, yeah. how can I forget, you know, my brother, you know. So later, so she's been having a little bit of like the alcohol.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
This makes her a little bit more receptive. So she's been like sitting on his lap, and he's been like kissing on her shoulder and stuff.
Yes.
And she's like, why does this feel good? Okay.
Yeah. Well, I can just go with this. I can totally just go
and so
with this.
He finally is just like, okay, it's time to go to bed now. I'm too hot and bothered.
She just picks her up and like we're going to our what is it called? The Bleaky?
Yes.
Tent. Yeah.
And so it goes down, baby. And she is a virgin, okay? And it's also really funny because he's like, okay, so you humans, y'all are really, you know, funny about being nudity and also about sex. Like, why?
Yeah.
And he's like, if I would have known that she were untried, I would have been more gentle. But the thing
right.
is, she completely enjoyed it. She was absolutely thoroughly pleasured. And she actually likes his roughness. And I really enjoyed
so
it the
do
first
we.
Time. Yeah, we love it. But he's also very caring for her
yes.
after. And,
yes.
like, he cuddles with her and everything. And like we said, like he's very concerned, like, I'm sorry, like I wouldn't have been so rough. And she's like it's fine,
yeah,
it's okay.
But he puts her in a hot tub to soak, and it has
what I'm
the
saying
self.
My man like, got aftercare like, down
oh yes
pat.
Oh yes. She's awesome.
But also, so the next day, so now, you know, they're consummated, she's his queen.
Mm-hmm.
And but she is having trouble like leading a leisurely life. She's worked her whole life, struggled.
Yeah.
And so she's like, give me a job. And he's like, you know what, I'll give you a job. You got to work in the pierogi pens. And she's like, anything but that.
He's recognized that they make her very, very nervous. And what's really cool about this is we notice that there's like a bond between like the king and his pierogi. I forgot what his name is.
Kylon or something.
Yeah. And we notice that happens, like each of the warrior, like their pierogi, it becomes like, you know, I think of it as just a long-term, there's some sort of bond between them, you know, that they obey them, they would never hurt them, they, you know, take care of each other, you know. And so he knows that they're not dangerous, but he doesn't understand why she fears them, and he's like, she's got to get over this. It must. He's thinking probably it's like just because she's never seen these creatures before, exactly, or whatever.
Because he doesn't know her history. He doesn't know her history. Right. Well, all of a sudden, there's this big like uproar because there was a Gurton that was sighted, and they actually go capture one. Yes. Okay.
Oh God.
And whenever he comes back and stuff, he's very like amorous because, of course, all that adrenaline's pumping, and so like, and she's like enjoying it. And after they're done, and he says, you know, there's a Gurton here, and we're torturing him basically for information to see where his, because he's a scout, so there has to be like a scouting party. Like, he's not alone. We need to figure out where they are because they're far from the Deadlands and they're not supposed to be. So we need to find out where they are.
Yeah.
And
why
then,
are they spying?
Exactly. So this Gurton decides not to say anything. So there's going to be basically this trial, and that's all he tells Luna.
I know. This was, to me, tough for her because they even, everybody's sort of glum. Her Peaky are kind of, you know, a little bit somber that morning. Like, we have to prepare you for this trial.
Yeah, you have to be like, you know, you have to act as your role in queen, and we have to prepare you. It's right. Like kind of like a ceremony type of thing. And she, when she gets there and everything's going down, when she realizes that this Gurton's actually going to be executed, this isn't like a trial. This is like an execution. And so she tries to stop it, and she has no idea what's going on, okay? And so she tries to stop it, and it actually creates this distraction where the Gurton actually wounds a warrior. Yes. And he showed himself to be vicious, and Arakan does behead
him.
He
tries to escape, yeah.
Exactly.
And Arakan beheads him.
And so when they're back in their tent, Orokon's like, we cannot be divided like this. Like, I know what's best for my people. I will never put my people in danger. I have to make these decisions.
Yes.
And that's one thing that you'll never get me to compromise on is doing something that jeopardizes the safety of my people. And this is where he tells her about his history, saying like, my father was merciful, you know, and it cost him. And I won't do that. You know, I've learned.
I like totally understand this scene, but also I was a little upset that they didn't prepare her better. And she's angry too. She's like, why didn't you tell me? Like give
if
me
you
information.
Warned me. Like, but I do like how this was the moment for their communication, where she just like, you need to tell me. I'm unaware
and then
of your customs.
Yeah, she's like, I'm sorry. I won't do it again.
Like I know that was wrong. Like, right. I know. And like, Hukan was like in the audience and like kind of just like, see.
She's like, see? She's not good enough to be the queen
fucking
of this horde.
Hukan.
She, bitch. Anyway, we do not like her. But also, you know, this becomes a little bit of a barrier because he's angry for a while. Because, you know, one of his men has been injured.
He's just frustrated because he wants her to assimilate to this life, and she's not doing it very
fast
well.
Enough.
Exactly. And, like, whenever they bathe, he's, like, touching her, and she, in her head, it's so interesting. In her head, she's just like, oh, I'm enjoying this. Wait, but don't show it. Like, stay still. And just, like, she's ashamed of, like, being aroused. And then when she's unresponsive, he stops.
I know. So this is becomes interesting. So there's, first of all, we've had this incident, and so there's this tension between them. And then when he goes to touch her, like Jess says, she just like is like freezes and is like waiting for more. And then when she's non-responsive, he stops and he says, go to sleep. Like, it basically, you know, sleep, Kalis, you know. And so she's getting frustrated because she's all hot and bothered. She's like, why is he doing this to me? Like, why is he like touching me and then like not, you know, following through? Like,
so,
why
like,
don't
she
has
a bit of
me?
Sexual frustration
not
right
only
now.
That, she's starting to get suspicious. Where is he going to relieve his sexual tension?
And like, at first, whenever she got to the tent and their first night, and he brings out this silky nightgown that's basically see through. She thinks that this is a stash, like this chest of jewels and clothes is a stash that he uses for the women that he frequently
his
pleasures and stuff. Yeah,
yes.
Exactly. And so she thinks that it's just the Dakari way, that there's going to be other women, and she's fine with it in the beginning because she's just like, maybe if I stay and give him his pleasure, he'll get tired of me and he'll send me back to my village.
Right.
So like, she's always thinking that she's going to go. But that was before she knew that she was going to be queen. And so now she's kind of not okay with the thought of him being with somebody
now
else.
She's
and so
falling
she's stewing.
For him. Yes.
He has to leave because they're going scout the party now. And then she starts shoveling shit. So I mean, like, it's all downhill for her. She's sexually frustrated and she has to shovel shit.
I don't know why I loved her scenes in the pierogi pen, which
because it was fun.
The little boy Jabari or
and
whatever.
He thought his job was the best because it's important because yes. He has to sift through the poo because it's fuel for their fires.
Yes, he's like this shit gatherer is an important job. He's like so happy.
And
like,
one day I'm gonna be a warrior and like this is so great, cute. Isn't it? And I love how Mirari is just like your beautiful shoes are gonna get dirty, so she kicks them off and she's like that's not what I meant.
And then they get in there with her and then Lavi. Mirari's like,
I can't let you do this by yourself. You're going to be here all afternoon. I'm going to help you.
And then I love how Lavi's just laughing the whole time. Then Mirari says something like quickly into Kari and she frowns and then she gets in there and she's like, damn it, now I have to shovel shit. And even like warriors stop and watch them. They're like, what are these women doing? Like, you know, it's, I love these scenes of her like assimilating. So the Mirari.
And having like a little bit of fun, you know, it's a little bit of levity. It's not all doom and gloom. It's funny.
Mariki, the guy that's the master of the pierogi, he's
a little bit surly and he enjoys putting her through her through her ropes.
Oh, well, this is what happens. So when they're away on their scouting, he had told her she could not visit the injured soldier from the Girton, which was her fault. And she wanted to apologize. So when he leaves, she like basically tells her, the guard guy, hey, take me to the soldier, you know, who's injured. And so, they meet, and he's really nice, and his mate is really nice, and
they're
just
kind of
like
stunned that she apologizes. Yeah, like it's my fault. You're hurt, and I shouldn't have. And I'm very sorry.
Right. And so as she's leaving, he says, "Go to the stand and get this kind of fruit, whatever this haji kind of fruit." She's like, "The pierogi master loves those, and he might soften to you." Yeah. So it's like and this is the other thing is like all the Dakari gossip. So everybody knows what's going on around camp. You know
exactly. Everyone kind of like stops and watches her shovel shit and stuff. And so they're like, yeah, he's a hard taskmaster, but you can soften him with this fruit that he really likes. So it's like really nice, you know, they're helping her. They're helping her, which is very, very nice. Also, while she's bathing all the grossness off of her, Hukan fucking comes in. Swear. So she comes in and she has an interesting proposition for her. She says, so, because like Arakan's away. I can get you back to your village if you want. Like, I'll help you get back to your village.
Yeah.
Luna's response is, get out. I don't go back on my word. I told Orokhan that I would stay here and he would, you know, not hurt my brother, not hurt my village. And I don't go back on my word. Like, I won't tell Orokhan of your betrayal. Like, she point blank says, like, this is a betrayal. You're going behind his back, trying to do something to get what you want. Yeah, exactly. Like, I may not be what the strongest, but like, I'm going to stay by his side now. I've made a commitment now. Like, I'm in. I'm sorry.
I love this moment because I was so afraid she would be swayed by this woman, you know, and she wasn't. Like, she's like, no, I gave him my word. I made a commitment to him. And
I loved
that's
it
what
too.
I'm gonna do.
It's so perfect. Really she's on it. The cusp of like totally accepting him.
Yes.
Like, she's right there. Okay.
Yes.
And so Arkon does return that night. And again, she's struggling with this turmoil. Like, I want him to come on to me, and he's not. Okay. And so she
would start and stop things.
Exactly. So she's frustrated. It's been a couple days since he's been back. And so she decides one night to go follow him because he, you know, is just not coming on to her. She's like, okay, he's tired of me already, and this can't do, and I have to go see who he's being with. She walked into this tent because she hears female voices, but it was actually like a meeting. Like,
yeah,
he was in a meeting.
She heard his voice, then some female, and she's like,
and
damn
it. Like,
it.
Hukan was in there, another older woman, and then so she runs out of the tent, and he follows her, and he's like, wait, no, tell me what's wrong.
What's going on?
I need to know. Like, obviously, you're upset about something, and that's when she admits, like, I thought you were with another woman, and he's just like, that's what you think of me. Like,
he's angry.
Do you think that you can go with other men? Because that's not the case. Because
I will kill them.
I will kill them. Like, do humans take multiple mates? And she's like, no, but like
it's so funny.
Finally,
I love this.
We get the communication where he's just like, no, you are my only mate. I will only be with you. And she's like, I wanted to be with you and I liked your touch. I just didn't know what to do because I am untried. I don't know how to handle this.
Oh, wait. That day before this happens,
this is when we get
the advice from Lavi.
So she confides in her handmaids, like, I don't know what I'm doing wrong because he's just not touching me. And they're like, oh, so that's why he's been so surly with the guards?
That's why he's so angry and short with everyone.
Because the Dakari, like, they love their sex. Like, it's all the time with them, okay?
Yes.
So, like, yeah, you really – and they're like, well, did you show that you were receptive to him? And she's like, No.
Wait, is that what I'm supposed to do?
Am I supposed
she's
to
like
do that?
She's like so innocent. It's and so she's cute.
Like, and I love how Mirari's just like, he won't touch you if he thinks that you don't want him. Which yes. I'm like, I love that. That's and just felt, a thing. That's just a thing in Dakari.
And Lavi's like snapping, like, tell me what's going on. So then she yeah, like, translates to her. And then Lavi snaps something back. She said, what did she say? She said, suck his cock and he'll do anything you want.
She goes, men are easy.
Just, men are easy. Just suck his cock.
And you'll have him on his knees worshiping you.
So I was like, oh, Lavi, you're
Lavi
awesome.
Lavi gives the best advice. And so that's exactly what she does. She kneels yes. down and she and he's like, what are you doing?
What
and she's like,
happening?
She's like, I'm taking what's mine, okay? And he freaks out. He loves it.
Oh, God.
Okay, so now we're on the same page.
Yeah.
Now she's just accepted her desire for him. She has accepted that she is jealous. She doesn't want him to be with anybody else. And she's just like, okay, well, now I'm all in to
yes.
this relationship.
Yes.
Now we're in a relationship.
Now they're truly, like, mated.
And he's, like, so into this. And he's just like, you will bear my children. And it's just going to be amazing. And this is going to be
daughters
he
and
loves
sons.
It.
Like, I mean, he's just.
We will have so many children because we won't stop fucking, basically. I love it so much. Also, we have another scene since she's moved up in the world of Pierogi Pen. She has to actually scrub them because the Pierogi Master actually knows that she is also afraid of them. And so he's trying to force her hand to get closer to the beast. And so she does end up by scrubbing them. And she notices that if she talks to them, it calms them a little bit. But the problem is when one actually comes up behind her, she starts freaking out a little bit. And Arakan was on the outside of the pen. And he comes behind her to hold her there. And he's just like, why are you afraid? Like, just let them smell you. They're just curious. They're actually highly intelligent creatures. And she's like trembling and her heart's pounding. And he's like, I know that your fear is real. It's just unfounded. They're not, yeah. they're intelligent creatures and they're not like usually like vicious or anything. And so that's the night where she confides in him about
yes.
exactly why she's afraid. Cause he's like, tell me, why are you so afraid of them? You know? Because mine is loyal and, you know, they'll be loyal to you if you just show them like respect and stuff. And so she says that, when they were starving, her mother, who wasn't even a hunter, went out with a knife, into this ice forest mm-hmm. and she followed her and she has a lot of guilt because she's like, I should have brought my mom back. You know, I should have told
right.
her not to go out there, but I was
but
so
I was
hungry.
Hungry.
I was so hungry. And
yeah.
I just thought I was just going to follow her. Well, he ends up by telling her, well, it was the cold months and Pierogi actually nest during the cold months in ice forest. She was probably protecting
her
nest,
yes.
you know, and it was just a tragic accident. Like this actually doesn't happen. You know what
yes.
I'm saying? They don't just attack
yes.
people without provocation. And this is very, very rare. And this is just, you know, I'm sorry that it happened to you. I'm sorry.
I love also that we get this explanation that like, it's really just another thing they don't understand about this planet, you know, and that she was in a dangerous place at that time because they were just being protective of their nests and their babies and whatever. Like it was animal instinct. It wasn't like, you know, they were attacking to feed on a human, you know what I mean? That kind of thing. And so I love how we learn more about the culture of the land and the people
yeah.
like through all these situations.
And also know? She asked like, cause she said that, you know, she didn't actually, she's like, I don't even know if I eased my mom's suffering. Cause I didn't even know how to wield the knife.
Oh, so sad.
Which that broke my heart.
I know.
And so she asked him like, could you teach me how
yeah.
to wield weapons and how to fight? And he was like, I will be the one to protect you. And she's like, I know, but like, just in case something happens,
case
you know?
Happens, like,
so like he starts to become a trainer and he's like, hey, I'm just not going to take it easier on you
I
just because you're
that.
My queen.
He's
but
like,
it also like turns into a lot of like foreplay and stuff
yes.
with them. And it's just like, it's really fun time.
Oh,
really fun
I love
scenes.
When they are doing these little scenes. Like there's one time where he's basically like teaching her in the forest. He takes her out of like the hunt. What do they call it? The training ground. Sorry, I couldn't think of the word. The training grounds. And they go into the woods and he's like, you need to use anything around you that, you know, that might be helpful.
Like
whatever.
Anything could be a weapon.
Anything could be a weapon. And, but he ends up, you know, knocking the blade from her hand and lands on top of her. And as, you know, she kind of lures him in for a kiss. She grabs the blade and puts it to his neck. And he's like, oh, he's like,
that's good.
He's like, that's good.
Good
you
job.
Actually use distraction to get one over on me, you know? And so
exactly.
that is good foreshadowing for something
yeah.
that happens later.
Exactly. It's perfect. So
yeah.
another thing again, His Orokhan's big thing, like I said, is he wants her to accept this way of life and let go of the human stuff. And one day, whenever she's just kind of like frowning, thinking, he's asking her, what is she thinking about? And she says, you know, my village, my brother. And he's just like, when are you going to stop thinking about the damn village? And,
yeah.
And she's like, I can't, like, the village isn't something that's calling to me. That wasn't ever home, you know, but my brother, I still love him, even though he messed up, I still love him.
I can't just like cut him out of my heart.
Yeah.
You know?
It's not that I'm more loyal to humans or anything. It's just like, I miss my brother. I know he's probably suffering and, you know, I'm happy here kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which, they're planning on moving camp pretty soon.
He's been waiting for the scouts to return.
And she thinks like, oh, well, we're going to move to the south, which is further away from my village. Maybe we could swing by my village and I could just see my brother. And he's just like, it's too dangerous. We really don't have enough time. Right. I can't spare the men, basically.
Right.
Okay. And then a couple days later, his scouts come back, and she notices that they're coming like from the north, not from the south,
because she
thought that the scouts were going looking ahead, because that's what they're supposed to be doing, to look for a place for their next camp,
right?
You know,
right?
And so she gets called into the tent, and she sees her brother Kevan and Orokhan, and he had sent his warriors to go get Kevan and offer
so
him
sweet.
A place in the horde
yes.
to make her happy. Okay,
and immediately. She goes to Orokhan, is just like, you know, hugging and kissing him and showing affection.
Thank you so
like,
much.
It's the sweetest.
And also, she has a conversation with her brother and basically says, like, hey, I'm honestly really happy here and you could be happy too. There's a lot of things that you don't know. And she defends the Dakari because he's just like, you're confused. And she's like, no, I'm not. Like,
there's no such thing as Stockholm syndrome, but that's kind of what he's thinking.
My husband. Is kind to me and I've lived here. Like I never had to live and I was always worried about you and like now I'm happy and like because he even says, well, come back to the village. And she's like, why do you even want to go back there? You're
like,
ill-treated.
Why?
You're emaciated now. Like,
I know.
Why would you want to go back? And he was just like, but that's home. And she's like, no. And he was like, so if I go, you won't come. And she's like, no, I won't. And she goes back and she tells Orokhan here. She's like, you know, you once asked me if I had the choice, would I go back? And my brother actually asked me if I would go and I told him no. This makes Orokhan so fucking happy. He's like, truly? You're just going to stay with me forever?
Yes.
Like, now of your own volition?
He hears, like, it's evidence of her loyalty to
because
him.
He does confess to her, like, I regret taking you from your village the way that I did. Like,
yeah.
I regret kind of forcing you away.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because he loves her, you know?
Yes.
They haven't said it yet, but he does. He loves her and she loves him. And it's just, like, so beautiful.
Y'all, So they all unpack and like they unpack the whole camp in like a morning and they're on their way. They're traveling. And something that starts to happen is, she's having morning sickness. And while they're on their trail, she suddenly like runs, like takes, she's on her own pierogi now. And she like runs off to the, like basically the woods off to the side and her guard chases her and then Mirari chases her.
What's wrong?
And then Orokhan's like, what's happening? You know? And she's like, no, it's just something I ate. Like, she didn't want to tell him yet until she's sure. And so we find out that the healer has certain herbs that she can basically test her
urine. It's basically like a pregnancy test.
Yeah, P-test. that she can figure out whether or not she's pregnant. She's like,
so they
wow,
do it in secret.
Know?
She's like, I don't want to tell Orokhan
until I know for sure.
Because it might not be the case.
Yeah.
So it's like Mirari takes it on the sly so that it could go get tested.
Yeah.
And then
they have another incident too while they're on their way.
So while they're on their way, she actually looks into the forest because she's studying the landscape because she has not seen this whole entire plane. She's only been to her village.
Yeah.
So now they're like riding around and she's like, wow, this is cool. This is new landscape. So cool. She notices in the forest, she thinks she sees a Gurtin.
Yeah.
So she tells Orokhan and Orokhan's like, it's not a good idea to split us up. But once we get into our camp, I'll send out scouts because they absolutely should not be this far from the Deadlands at all.
And he makes her like, you're riding right next. In my
right next to me, like on my pierogi, like you're precious, okay. And so whenever they get to camp, she does find out that she is in fact pregnant.
Yes,
and she's really excited about that. And she like can't wait to tell him, because she knows how it's important to like make his line stronger again. Mm-hmm. And she just like, I'm pregnant. And he's like, truly? And he's like, yes, I'm so excited. Like, and he like that night he like talks to her belly in Dakari, and it's just like, it's so freaking sweet. And I love it so, so much. So their new camp is actually abutting this forest, and makes her a little wary. Yeah. Lots of vines. Makes her a little wary.
And she did see Hukan coming out with like a basket of like, she'd gone to get some sort of berries or something.
And berries,
same. But she looks sort of like she's looking around as she's coming out.
And like Hukan actually says like, oh, I can make you the sweetbread or whatever if you want from these berries. And she's like, okay, that'd be nice. And she's like, why is she being nice to me?
Why is she being nice? This is very suspicious. But at the same time,
but then she's like, I want her to like me. This is, yeah.
I need to try to make this work, you know?
And if she's going to extend the olive branch, then I can't say no. Right. So like, I'm going to go with this new and improved Hukan.
Oh no.
So another day, Hukan's by the forest, and she motions for Luna to come she's like, I need help. Because like this has to be prepared for tonight.
They're doing like a big feast, and she has like an extra basket for her to help gather these berries.
Like, could you help me? I'm old, so I can't like gather as fast. Like, I need some hands. Yeah. And so she goes, and they're getting deeper and deeper and deeper.
She has
into
two guards following.
Yes. Yes. Y'all. And she even makes note. She's like, man, do these berries grow this deep into the forest? There's no sun.
And just when she's about to like say, I think I'm going to turn back. Like, she's getting the, you know, that feeling you get when something's wrong, guys. Follow that. Follow your gut.
Yeah.
Like, just don't. Because she's starting to get this like, you know, frisson, as we would call it. Like, this is not good. And so right as she's about to say, let's turn back, like that, there's like, it sort of opens up to this little like meadow or whatever of the berries. She's like, here they are, here they are. She's like, oh, okay. So she's like, okay, she wasn't lying. This is like for real. And when she goes to like gather the berries, we hear like this sling of steel, and she turns around, and there are some Gurton who have just slaughtered and killed her guards.
The two men.
Yes.
It's, and then she's trying to warn Hukan. She's like, watch out. And then all of a sudden, like, the Gurton just stop by Hukan, and she's like, you're in league with them. So apparently Hukan had made this deal.
Yes.
And she even says, like, you said you wouldn't kill the guards. And that's whenever Luna realizes that this is something that the Gurton and Hukan have planned together. That Hukan wants her gone enough to make a deal with them. Mm-hmm. And she's just like, take her, hurry before he notices that she's gone.
Right.
And so she's been betrayed. Okay. And she's just like, he's gonna know. He's gonna know that I didn't leave.
Yeah.
And he'll find me. And she's like, nope, nope. No, he won't. Okay.
He won't know. And Hukan doesn't know about the child either.
Nope. She's unaware. Mm. So she is now captured. She's knocked out. And she comes to, and they're just like, they're not good people. They're not good beings. They're saying how creatures. They would normally like rape her, but their king, which is news to her because she didn't think that the Gurton were this organized, wants her for himself since the Vorak Han executed his son. So that scout that he executed was actually the son of this so-called Gurton king.
Prince.
And she's like, oh, shit. So she just like, she's like, you should let me go right now because my husband's going to find me. And they're like, no, he's never going to find you or whatever.
They every time she says something back to them, they hit her across the face.
Her.
They beat her. They even they even take a brand, a Gurton brand. It's like this
three lines
waving or whatever, and brand her on her shoulder so that she's marked as one of their like slaves or whatever. Y'all, it is brutal. It is brutal.
And her only hope, she's just like, he will find me. He will save me.
And she keeps like guarding her child. Like, she's like, please don't. They don't kick her in the stomach, thank God. But she's concerned about it. She's like, I've got to survive for my child. I've got to find a way out. So they're drinking like heavily around the fire. And so she starts to think, okay,
there's ever going to be an opportunity now is the time.
Yes. And she is bound too. Her hands are bound. She's like, I need to go to the bathroom. And of course, they were like, so what? And like, she's like, well, unless you want to smell pee all over the place, you know, as you drag me, back to your whatever camp, you know. And then they're like, okay. Then they kind of wrinkle their noses like, okay. So they send one of the guys to take her. And so she remembers that moment of distraction and that training with Arakan. She's like, I have to distract him. And so she kind of like,
she asks him, I need help undoing my pants. Since my hands are tied and my feet are tied, like, can you help me with my pants?
And she knows that's going to get this guy all like,
because they're gross.
Because they're gross like that. And then instantly he is. He's like, yeah, I'm not going to wait. I'm going to basically rape you right now. And so while he's like about to like grab her and going for her and like ripping her ties or whatever, she grabs his blade and
kills
him. Yes.
awesome. Fucking kills him.
Right where Erkan told him, like, where their hearts are. It's like the center of their chest or something.
She uses the knife to cut her bond, to cut the ropes around her legs, and then she makes a run for it.
Into the forest. He cried out, so the others are on the way.
It is pitch black. And so there are four other Gertons. Or how many were there? Were there five?
I think there was five total.
So there's four chasing her. It is pitch black. She even, like, runs into trees and boulders because it's that dark and black around. Okay. And she finally finds this, like, little crevice that she can squeeze through. And she uses, like, a rock to, like, throw over there to, like, hopefully make them go in the opposite direction and stuff. And then finally she hears this Gertan, like, scream in agony. She's like, ah, my husband is here.
Like, she hears, like, the sounds of the Dakari steel and Dakari shouting.
And, like, the beat of the Pikari hooves. And she's just like, oh, they're here. They're here to rescue me.
Yes.
And so she does, like, get out of the crevice because she's trying to go toward them. And unfortunately, there's one Gertan that
– and it was that leader of their little pack.
Yeah, that, like, grabs her. She's fighting him. She's kicking him. She's slashing at him. And he's like, if I'm going down, you're going down.
Oh,
like,
God.
But then Orokhan comes out.
Oh, and does he come through?
He's mad.
Holy fucking shit.
He's so mad. And he immediately beheads him.
Oh, yeah.
He sees her because, like, she's been punched multiple times in the face. Like, she doesn't look great, okay? Yeah. And he is just like, Luna, like, oh my God. And, like, swings her onto his pierogi.
Just cradles her close.
Cradles her. And she tells him, like, you know, I killed one. There are five. And so there's one. He was like, go make sure that you find him. Like, do not let him escape. And so they go back. And the next time she wakes up, she is in her tent and she is being taken care of. And her brother, it was actually the one to alert Orokhan. He saw them disappear into the forest and Hukan come back alone.
Yes.
And so I was like, yes.
So she's already, like, on house arrest. She's in prison because he knows she had something to do with this, like, even before they go and get her.
Yes. And the healer has checked her out. The baby's okay. Everything's okay. She just has bumps and bruises and stuff. So there's going to be a trial.
A trial for Hukan. This is interesting. I liked it. I like this.
Me too. And I like how Luna's very sad because she's just like, he shouldn't have to go through this. He shouldn't have to, you know, banish his family. Because one thing she finds out about the Dakari is that they don't execute their people, but what they do is they banish them from the Horde.
Right.
And they only give them one knife and they have to survive alone. And they're never going to be accepted into another Horde again.
And they're such a communal people that this is
almost a death sentence. You probably won't survive on your own.
Yeah. You have to, you know, beg mercy of another Horde to accept you. If they don't, then you're just on your own.
Yeah.
You know?
And so, and this is the moment where Hukan actually finds out that she was pregnant. And this is the thing. She wouldn't have put her in jeopardy because this is her bloodline. And so she wants that to go on even though she doesn't actually like her.
You see this, like, wave of regret.
Yes. And this is, like, the ultimate betrayal. Not only were you about to take away my queen, but you were also put my child in danger. Like, that's... No,
not unacceptable.
And, like, it's so, she's trying to comfort him. He's so sad. And he's just like, tell me you love me. Like, she's just like, what can I do? And he's just like, tell me you love me again. And it's just like, oh, it's just like so sweet and amazing. And he just like, it's okay. Like, our line will be strong again. So we didn't really talk about this, but he had told her in the beginning that the goddess actually showed right whenever he saw her for the very first time that she would be his queen.
Yes.
So it was almost like a vision saying, like, the goddess revealed you to me saying, like, this is your future queen.
Yeah.
And then he says that we're going to have a daughter. And she was like, it might be a son. How do you know? And she was like, he was like, no, the goddess showed me we're going to have a girl and then three boys and then one more girl. And she was like, oh, damn. Okay. And so, and she's like excited about this, about having a huge family to love and finding her place among the Dakari again. And also she tells him that there is rumored to be a Gertan king. And
this gives them some intel that they did not know. They had no idea, like you said, that they were more organized.
Because they assume that the Dakari have more people.
Mm-hmm.
They have the fighting numbers and they just don't expect the Gertan to put up an organized fight. But they claim to have a lot of people.
Yeah.
And they're just waiting for their time to strike.
And they were taking her to punish Arakan. So they have, like, vengeful thoughts and plans and schemes. So this is definitely a more, like, thinking people than they gave them credit for. They just kind of thought of them as like savages.
Lying in wait for their opportunity.
Right. And growing in numbers because that leader told her, we have enough of an army to destroy them all.
And they want to take over the planet. They want to wipe out the Dakari. They're just biding our time.
Yeah.
So a couple months later, there is this Horde King that shows up on the outskirts and he has like blonde hair, which is unusual because the Dakari only have dark hair, you know? And he says that there's going to be a meeting in Dothic that, Orokhan needs to go, and it's going to be a meeting about the Gurtons because they need to take this threat seriously now. Mm-hmm. So. That basically sets up the next hero for the
next
book.
And it's so good. I just finished it. It's amazing.
Okay, so what is your showdown scene?
I knew this was coming. I don't know.
It comes every episode.
I know, but I couldn't think. I think, honestly, there were so many beautiful moments, but honestly, I love the moment because I was shocked when we walked in the tent and her brother is standing there and he's like brought him to her because he knew that, you know, and that moment, and it wasn't like the reunion between her and Kevin, I don't know how you say his name, but it was the way she thanked him and told him that she loved him and everything right after that. We see this like bond just triple fold after that moment because, it's just so beautiful.
It is beautiful. My showdown scene is when they finally get on the same page with sex, okay? I loved when she was just like, because I don't know. I like whenever they admit that they're jealous and he was like, yes. Oh, you're jealous? That means you have feelings for me. Like, it's just like a simplistic form of like, oh, this if you're jealous, then you care about me.
You want me, you know? Just for me. Yeah.
And I just love because he's been waiting for so long because he's, like I said, he knew from the goddess that this was his mate. This was his queen. So he was just waiting for her to get on board. And finally, he's having this, you know, outward show that she wants more from him. And he thought that she just didn't want him and he was just suffering in silence, basically allowing her to, you know, just sleep undisturbed when he really wanted to be banging her brains out. And so finally they get all sexy and hot, and also just because she becomes more comfortable being the initiator.
Yes.
And so she's like, you know, when she had that to drink when the first time that they had sex, and she was like, I like touched him back and I was kind of really aggressive and it was fun. And so maybe I just need to learn how to just, you know, let loose, and that's okay to do. So I don't know. I just loved it. And it just shows that they're such a passionate couple, and I was just very happy for them.
I agree. I love that too. And it was also just so sweet how she was like, she was so like innocent in like the ways of, you know, sexual relations and everything, but she wanted to learn. She wanted to be like everything to him. It was just lovely. This was just, y'all, I love this book. I love the second book. I have the third one. I'm like ready to fucking go. They're so good. So good.
Well, I'm so glad that you loved it. All right, guys, we hope that you enjoyed today's episode, and we look forward to the next one where we'll be discussing Unhinged by Onley James. Thanks so much for listening.
This goes out to the fangirls.
Life's better with a little HEA.